Hey, hey, friendos. Welcome to The Road to Nowhere, a Marvel Champions LCG podcast. We focus on recapping Solo Champions League, but if you enjoy breaking down the finer details of a Marvel Champions matchup, then we have something for you. I'm your host, Josaru, and with us this week are regular guests, Greg.
Hello. Sorry, I'm wounded on my microphone. My microphone is not up to snuff right now, but we're working on it. But it's great to be here.
Life is falling apart
it's
everywhere.
Right. I can't trust my physical therapist gave me very hard exercises this week, and so my legs hurt. So yeah, everything's falling apart, guys. You're the only people that can help me get together.
we do our best. And resident runner Gondo, how are you?
My legs are also tired, but for a different reason. I'm doing good though. I'm kind of disappointed it's summer because I run pretty hot, but we'll survive and get back to winter where I belong.
Yeah, that's we're that way too. That ended up making the choice to live in British Columbia pretty solid for us.
Yeah, I live too far south. I don't want to say exactly where I am, but I'm in the Northeast United States and I'm too far south.
Now you say, Gondo, that you're running. Are you being chased at all?
No. This is all voluntary.
See, I don't understand that. I don't understand why you would do that.
Well, I have recently, because I have an elliptical in the place, the elliptical climber that is in the place that I live, and so I've been able to go play Zelda while I'm on the elliptical.
Oh.
It's pretty solid combo, because it turns out I can probably go about 50% longer because I'm distracted.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, there's a social science thing around this, which is you're pairing an undesirable activity with a desirable activity, so you work out more because of you can only do it with Zelda. It's a good tactic.
Yeah.
And for me, as you can see by the new channel I forced Innsmouth Bear to make, I enjoy hiking, and a lot of it's solo, so I run to stay further away from the limit of my fitness while I'm out there by myself.
So
I figured that's a safety factor.
Solo hiking league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Discord.
Every month you get ranked by distance and elevation.
Right, see, yeah, that would at least encourage me to do it. You know, that's the trouble, is that there's no desirable activity I can even put with it. So maybe a game. But speaking of games, I wanted to broach a topic that we have a new contest in the SCL in the Grandmasters Arena right now, which is what Marvel hero is most deserving of a hero pack? Which ones either don't exist or haven't been announced? Basically, which ones haven't been announced or don't exist right now? And so do you have an opinion either on ones you would pick yourself? If Fantasy Flight gave you a blank check, which one would you make? Also, which one do you think will win this contest? What the community will pick? Any thoughts or predictions? Yeah, Gondo,
where are you at?
Let's see. I think I'd pretty much like to see a Magneto hero pack. I think that's where I'm going to land at the end of things. That would be pretty exciting for me. But given my own, I'd probably pick Magneto or Daredevil, if I had to say. And they're both in the tournament, so we'll see how I end up landing if I'm forced to vote between them.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people I thought would be. So we're in the first round voting right now. It'll probably, by the time this podcast comes out, there'll be the sort of second half of the first round. But already some contests, like Blade was sort of a higher seed hero, and he's losing pretty handily to Magic right now. And Magneto's winning, but only by one vote against Multiple Man. So some of the big heavy hitters, yeah, who knows if they'll make it out of the first round or not. Josh, do you have any preferences, predictions?
Well, I mean, part of it is trying to be realistic about things that are kind of obvious to be coming versus things that are a little less likely, I think. Right, like I'm, you know, it it seems pretty likely there's going to be a, you know, Daredevil and Street Levels thing at the not so distant future, and a Fantastic Four thing at not so distant future. So I do like the kind of reformed villain angle of Magneto or your White Queen or something like that. That might be a little less likely.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, we sort of got that with Nebula already, the anti-hero idea. So yeah. I love that idea. Yeah. And Loki and Magneto and Emma Frost are such naturals for that. I could see them doing all three at some point.
But I think I also just really want a S.H.I.E.L.D. box. Not that I especially like S.H.I.E.L.D., but I like what S.H.I.E.L.D. does in the game. So I think it would be neat to see what they might try to do with, or kind of even your Nick Furies or Professor X's, some of these characters that are seeming like they might not ever actually have a hero, but that are kind of meant to these big impact and runaway allies.
Yeah, the S.H.I.E.L.D. box would be, I could see a Nick Fury Quake or Nick Fury, you know, like, yeah, insert your S.H.I.E.L.D. hero here. Yeah, I think that would be awesome. Yeah, my personal, to your point, like if I'm given a blank check, I'm picking the most weird, obscure hero I can. So like, you know, a Howard the Duck or someone mentioned Squirrel Girl. Right.
It's not obscure if I knew you were going to say that.
Squirrel Girl, I'm a big fan. Or also I put on there, and did make a tournament, the X-Men hero, Phantom X, who's like Agent 13. But there is an Agent 13, right? No, Weapon 13, right? He's a part of the Weapon X program. And he's French and he's annoying, so that I'll put him right to the top here for me. So well, I'd pick one of those guys for sure.
French Canadian, or
I think
France,
he's modeled after Diabolique, which is like a 60s spy movie from France. So it's very specific, but those movies are really out there because he kind of wears a super hero mask a lot on his adventures, even though it's a spy movie.
Fun contest.
If anyone has any ideas, we're hunting for more ideas for the arena. So if you're on the SCL server, Discord server, hit me up.
Right, and the new stuff is now getting more imminent, right? So it's supposed to be in August that the new content's coming out, and they have they announced all four extra heroes?
Daredevil, so
Iceman,
yet.
No, not Iceman.
We think
sorry.
The last one's Daredevil. I'm sorry. Deadpool. Thank you, Deadpool. In fact, I didn't even allow Deadpool in this contest because I was so sure that'd be the last one they announced for us.
Right. So that'll be the sixth one, and it looks like they're doing like they did in the previous wave, where they actually released two extra heroes when the box came out. Is that right? No, it won't be. It'll be six altogether.
Oh, right,
sorry.
It was eight. So, the X-Men.
Maybe two
eight,
and then four, one sense. At a time. Yeah.
And,
Right. So there'll be.
I was going to say, as an X-Men fan, I'm very salty that they put Angel in X-Force because, you know, it's like there's five original X-Men. We haven't had two of them yet. And, you know, if Beast gets assigned a different team, my God, come on, put them on the X-Men team. They're the Kirby originals. Anyway, I think I've said this on this podcast before.
Maybe they'll put him in the Defenders with Submariner.
That's right. I think we talked about this before. The Angel and Iceman are former Defenders in the... No, former Champions. The old version of the Champions in the 70s. I don't want to keep bringing this up. I feel like I'm dating myself again.
Right. Well, but this would be an opportunity to do the redo of the Hulk, right?
That's right.
So
someone suggested the hero pack most deserving to be redone, but I think it would just be the Hulk because that's the one everyone likes and everyone thinks is bad.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, I'm excited for new content. I still have, you know, not played as much of the newer content as I might like to, but that's kind of the nature of the beast when SCL is kind of occupying most of your Marvel Champions activities. I had maybe played one game of Colossus before the current round we're in the middle of.
It's not many games of Colossus.
Oh my gosh. I know we're not going to preview the next round, but I'm struggling on this Colossus solo thing real bad.
Yeah, well, you know, the short of it is we're playing against Master Mold, who is a really bad villain to flip against. Not in terms of it's easy to lose by flipping, but it's easy to get overwhelmed when you flip because you basically get a sentinel every time you flip. And you can't confuse your way out of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely brutal.
And you just get really, your four cards are just so limiting when you don't flip either. So it's like, there's no good answer.
Gondo's two-word review, absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I think Master Mold would be a legit round two choice in Standard, but when you pair it with Colossus, it feels like it's round three. You know, it feels like this is going up against Ronin.
It's definitely tricky. You can really drag on. Anyway, that'll be a fun one to be talking about. So we're going to talk about Season 15, Round 1 of Solo Champions League. This is a season that doesn't have anything too specific going on beyond that we're going to see each of the Mutant Genesis box heroes, Colossus and Shadowcat, on their own. So we're seeing Colossus in Round 2, and we're going to see Shadowcat in Round 4. And we'll see some villains out of that box also as a result. But the first round that we had was one that I had the great pleasure of getting to put together, and I wanted to focus on heroes who really like flipping, and I wanted a villain that is reasonably safe to flip against, even though he kind of punishes you for flipping, it's still reasonably safe to flip against. So that was Taskmaster. So what we did is we had Taskmaster with Hydra Patrol, and then Sinister Assault as the extra modular, which is just a one that has some nice, big, impactful minions, and the minions all have 3 stars on their boost cards, which we'll talk about, but that was kind of the thinking on all that. So we'll get into the heroes, but maybe, Greg, you want to recap a previous recap of Taskmaster and Hydra Patrol?
Sure. Yeah, we were joking that Gondo and me have been co-hosts on both a former Taskmaster episode and a former Sinister Assault episode. So we're bringing it all together. But just to remind folks, to Josh's point, Taskmaster isn't too tough stat-wise. He attacks for 2 and schemes for 1 or 2. He does have these sort of small annoying pings. So basically every time you're in hero, you change into hero form, you get damage from the counter deck from whatever boost icons you get when you flip over. And then every round on the main scheme, if you're in hero form, you get either 1 damage or 1 threat. So depending on what is worse for you at the time, you can mitigate that. So you get those extra pings, and the flipping specifically to your point is a little worse because of the extra damage. But again, if you're getting much bigger benefits from that, it's probably worth it. And then the other big mechanic from Taskmaster is a fairly positive one, which is that you have these really amazing zero cost heroes that are captured by Hydra. So whenever one of these four side schemes come out called Captured by Hydra, if you clear it, you get one of these heroes for the rest of the game. So it's really powerful, and sometimes they come at just the right time. You have a Shang-Chi, which can stun. You have a White Tiger, which is great at removing threat. Elektra does lots of damage. So you have just some very good tools if you're able to hunt for those side schemes and pull that out. We're playing protection this time, but otherwise this would have been, the most obvious one way or another threat if you were target if you were playing Justice.
Yeah.
The other thematic card, which is also fun, is Mimicry, which basically has you discard cards from your deck, 5 of them, and if you discard a scheme or attack card, you get to he schemes or attacks. So he basically copies anything you're doing out of your deck. I played Rocket this time, and I actually love this card because I was usually in hero, and so he's looking for attack cards if you're in hero, and Rocket doesn't have attack events. So in protection, that was one of the safest cards you could have if you sort of deliberately didn't have this attacker threat cards in your deck. So that's Taskmaster, and like you said, we've played him before, and he's he's from Rise of the Red Skull, which is probably one of the easiest campaign boxes, and so it's a really good round one choice. Well done, Joss. It was much easier than last time.
Well, and much easier. Yes, it was much easier than last time, which was low key, but wasn't a real round one. The because we have the Hydra Patrol set, we have Hydra Soldiers, which are kind of the most tedious mid-level minions in the game because they cycle for an encounter card after you defeat them. And they have 4 health, which is a little bit of an awkward health for a lot of things. It usually takes a couple activations or whatever. So they're quite tedious without being overwhelming.
Yeah, for anything without overkill, it's usually like 2 things.
Yeah.
Or an underutilized 1 thing.
Yeah, it's funny. We just did, and this is Gondo's suggestion, but we did the weeniest encounter card contests, and we did weeniest minions, and they were almost all Hydra style minions, except for Hydra Soldier. It was not called weenie. That one didn't make it. It was the Hydra regulars and the bombers all made it, but the soldiers are tough.
Well, and even, I like the Hydra regulars, which are 2 health and insight 1. I actually quite like insight on some of these cards, because in some of these adventures, you're really often riding the line of being safe against that main scheme, and you have to actually consider things that can come up in the, other than just an advance, that can come up out of the encounter deck that could bump your threat over. So I quite like those things that have a little bit of insight on top of everything else.
Yeah, sometimes it's pretty scary though on some of the lower threshold schemes.
Yes, that's part of what I like, the added terror.
Right. Yeah, because this we just had one main scheme, although we had 12 threat threshold, which is pretty liberal. But yeah, if you weren't staying on top of it could swirl out of control for sure.
And then the other thing with the Taskmaster ability that can do the one extra, do 1 damage or one threat on your turn, against protection, and a lot of people were playing Energy Barrier, it's a pretty nice combo opportunity there as well. So you could just kind of turn that around back on Taskmaster.
Hey, you tell him I have a mimicry of my own.
That's right. Exactly. And it might be neat as we get more heroes that want to take a little bit of damage. Spider-Ham and the newly announced X-23 both like taking damage. It would be neat to see kind of a Taskmaster versus a bunch of heroes that like taking damage.
Right. All right. Yeah, Spider-Pig against it would just be insane. It's almost unfair.
Yeah. Almost unfair. The other modular that we had was Sinister Assault, right, Gondo?
Yeah, 6 chunky minions. They all have 6 HP, as their name might suggest. They have Villainous, and they all have 3 boost icons.
Hold on a second. I never noticed that it was 6 and went with Sinister 6. That's terrible.
It's good.
On my part, not on the theme.
This is the most thematic. It's one of the most thematic modular sets there is, I think. For lots of reasons.
Hilarious. Okay, carry on. That was just I can't believe I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's very on the nose. So their abilities are somewhat reminiscent of their villain form from the Sinister 6 scenario. When they activate or attack and damage you, like Doc Ock incites 2, and he puts a threat on each scheme after activation. Very similar. He's reaching his arms out and placing his little robot arms and all your little problems. Electro has Retaliate 1, and after engage and activate, you discard until an energy or wild resource is discarded, so he's milling your deck. Hobgoblin has Patrol, and after he activates, you take 2 indirect damage. Kraven is Steady, and after he attacks and damages you, you have to discard an upgrade or support. Scorpion is Tough, and after he attacks and damages you, you get stunned. It's also the same in the Mess of Things modular. And Vulture has Quick Strike, and after an activation, you have to discard a random card, which is my least favorite effect in the entire game. I hate having to discard random cards. It's always the one I want to keep most.
Yeah, it's loss aversion. Just tell me not to draw it in the first place, but don't show it to me and then get rid of it.
Yeah. Wait, is it least favorite in terms of like you wish they didn't put it in from a game design perspective, or just least favorite from the impact that you feel on it?
Maybe least favorite from the impact I feel. Like,
yeah,
I would much better mentally handle such an effect if it was discard one of your choice more often. Yeah. Because then I'd have a little bit more agency over it, but it's just like, oh, look, I need Swinging Webkick to kill this big minion. And then, oh, look, Swinging Webkick is gone. What will I do?
Yeah, the loss aversion piece is out of this world on that one.
Yeah, it's, as soon as you draw your hand for the next round before the villain starts, you're already kind of making plans of how you're going to, you know, use them all. And so you're already starting to emotionally connect with your cards before the villain starts to to push at you.
Yeah, I as an effect, I kind of, again, I do, it feels terrible, but I kind of like discard just from the perspective of, you know, one resource as a major cost of a thing you're having to pay is not that overwhelming. It's kind of the, just the feels bad of the opportunity that was lost, right? That
yeah, I think strictly speaking, it's probably not the worst thing that ever happened to you, but...
But it really rubs your face in it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then Gondo, you brought up the idea of, it was Gondo that brought it up, right? The discussing some of the protection strategy or protection archetypes, because some folks have been talking about them a little bit lately.
Surprisingly, I don't think that was me.
It was me, but Greg? Gondo, you know protection much better than I do. But I just took some notes on two of the SCLers out there have done some good think pieces around protection. Astrodar has a website where he's putting these aspect debriefs out and wrote a really good protection one. And then also I noticed the B20 Woodworking, who's on our channel as well, makes a lot of YouTube videos, and he made one. With kind of three ideas and deck on sort of how to address protection. And what's been interesting to me in SEL in the last, you know, maybe year is the card pools are getting big enough that there's sort of this emerging kind of meta around archetypes within each aspect. So, you know, it's like I'm playing a Hone Technique deck. Everyone kind of knows what you mean in aggression because you're building around a specific card to try to get, you know, that one going the most. And so, yeah, I play protection the least generally. So this was actually helpful to have it around. Although I played Rocket, and I think Rocket, almost everyone did what I did, which was, your repurpose deck where you're sort of, you know, leveraging the repurpose card to make a lot of use out of your tech upgrades. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go like super detailed in what these guys put together, but it is pretty interesting. Astrodar put them in sort of two main buckets. One is a little more multiplayer supporting other people at the table archetypes, and then obviously there's a lot of solo specific archetypes too. But the one that I think is relelevant for both solo and multiplayer is just the take no damage idea, where you basically are trying to get all the upgrades that give you perks when you don't take damage when someone attacks you. So your unflappables and your hard to ignores. And then you can do lots of different things with that. You can either add cards that buff your defense and give you perks like Desperate Defense, or just buff your defensive stat in general, or damage prevention cards like Jump Flip or Sidestep. So lots of ways you can kind of trigger the I didn't take damage perk around, but because I think that's as legit in solo as it is in multiplayer. It just maybe takes a little bit to set up because you got to get those cards set up there.
Right. Yeah. We'll see folks kind of that did take that approach. There was a real spectrum of either kind of going to the point of taking, you know, take no damage defense cards, but none of the upgrades because the setup is too high, so just didn't even bother, versus folks who really just went and maxed out the number of upgrades they could possibly put in related to that.
And it feels, when we get to the standings, it feels like this did take a little longer than a normal round one, just mainly because of the flipping elements of all these heroes, you know, sort of take a little bit longer to deal damage than a normal. So yeah, you probably did have time to do some setup if you were okay with a longer game this time.
Right.
Yeah, so some, I mean, just, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Gondo, I mean, anything on these lists of archetypes, maybe it's too much to go through all of them, but any of these are either your personal favorites or ones you kind of gravitate to since you're the protection guy here?
I like the readying build, where you just like have some juicy three attack hero and then you just attack a million times. And You do a ton of damage, and that one's great. I also like take no damage in multiplayer. That one's a lot of fun because you defend once and then like 4,000 things happen. That's really satisfying. One archetype I use a lot in SCL is, hey, look, this character's a web warrior character, by the way. Did you know? because Silk and Spider-UK both don't require a web warrior trait, so you can actually get into the web warriors pretty easy. In protection, if you don't feel like a cheater by playing leadership, and getting them in through like make the call or whatever. So protection leadership are probably the two aspects where you can pretty easily integrate web warriors.
Yeah,
that's something I feel a good number of us do, or maybe not, maybe it's just me, do in SCL.
There was surprisingly few overall this round, but I think in general, I fully agree with kind of Web Warriors is its own protection archetype that kind of gets hybrided with some other things often.
Yeah. Did it work out for me this round? Not really, but I still tried it.
Yeah, and Web Warriors, it feels like there's a lot of cards that give that sort of idea of controlling the encounter deck, because we mentioned Silk and... discarding treacheries and spider tingle, I think, has a similar effect that if you can kind of get that web thing going. The one I thought was one I hadn't thought of before, because I haven't really ever played this card, but D23 had one which was like a flow like water deck, where basically you're just doing lots of different defensive cards, because every time you do that, it deals one damage. And so, again, you're just pinging lots of different damage around, like we talked about before, the... Taskmaster deals one, you deal one back. Having all those little damage pings, especially after playing Colossus and all the tough cards that are being thrown around from all my villains, I'm like my kingdom for one damage. So that could be an interesting one for certain attacks.
Well, and there's also, so D20 called it kind of no exhaust defense, but it's something that works. In this very specific round, Vision was one of our heroes and works well with Vision because when Vision's in intangible form, he can't actually defend. So these cards that do things like just reduce the villain's attack or energy barrier and other cards like that allow you to take as little damage as possible from the attack without actually defending, that works really well with Vision.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Gondo, you want to be on the hot seat? What happened with you this round? What did you play? Or if you want to go further into your web warriorness of it all?
Yeah. So, if you watched the team up Joss and I did, I went ahead and just played my games with that, and it didn't get any better really. I think overall it was trying to do too many things and ended up doing none of them well. So. I had all wins because somewhat challenging Taskmaster if you're playing protection, because a lot of his ways to destroy you are damage. He's not particularly threatening in the scheming aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can manage to not lose to threat, probably going to have a pretty okay time. I had 6, 11, and 10 rounds. Round 2, which was the 11 round game, was the only clean one. Interestingly, counter to what I just said, I found it somewhat hard to keep my HP up because every time I'd go down to recover, I'd flip back up and take 3 damage from his right. Flipping to hero ability. I'm like, what the heck? I just got that back. And so I'm like, I'm glad I took all this threat just to be at the exact same HP I was at before. But
you got some ammo counters.
Yeah, I got some ammo counters. That's definitely true. And I had like one more card for a little bit. But the Web Machine deck was not very successful, despite me thinking there were so many hidden synergies within it. Just it didn't do anything, and that's okay.
Well, as per our discussions kind of earlier, the War Machine does have reasonably high setup cost. His he has a lot of things he wants to get down to become effective. So coupling him with anything else that has a bunch of setup can be pretty tricky.
How about 2 other things that require setup?
How about that? Yeah. The can I guess that your six turn game was one that you got captured by Hydra in the first or second turn?
No, that was not the case.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's amazing then.
I just like didn't run into any of the Sinister Six, and then I just kept zapping him with Pulsar Beam.
Right.
But it is a thing that captured by Hydra, like getting like the getting one or two of those out makes insane difference. And in the games where that didn't happen, yeah, those are by far my longer games, just because I didn't get that little perk.
Right. But you know, conversely, if you don't get that and don't get any of the big minions, then you're just able to put all your resources into defeating Taskmaster quickly. So that's kind of the other way it happens fast, I guess.
Yeah, I think that game I just kind of did War Machine things.
Right.
And, didn't do any of my other cards, and I just kind of rushed them down in six turns, as much as a rush six turns might be considered.
I mean, it was this round.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think
it wasn't clean though. I think I had like 3 threat left on the main scheme. I'm like, I'm just gonna end it. I don't think that's gonna go away.
the what's the top scoring round called? What's the I'm just looking it up.
Agent
here.
Of Shield.
Agent of Shield. So Yodaman, 1971st of their name had 6 turns, 0 villain health, 0 threat, and 14 hero HP as the...
Oh, I actually wasn't that far off, but I was like
right.
3 health and 3 HP off of that, I think.
Right. So the... But 6 turns being kind of the fastest that somebody actually had a good clean round, you know, so there were faster, but not nice and clean.
Yeah, and some round ones, you know, you're getting... 4, maybe 3 round, you know, wins sometimes. So, you know, if those were really, really easy first round. So yeah, it wasn't quite that.
Right. Well, there was the one that we were racing to try to get it in one.
Oh yeah, the other Taskmaster round that we did together. I actually got one. It was in the villain phase though.
Who were the heroes on that one?
I think it was just She-Hulk.
Oh, across all aspects?
Yeah, I think so.
Right, because you can activate multiple times with her and stuff.
Yes, indeed.
And we had the campaign elements.
Yeah, so you got an extra 5 cards.
Yeah,
right. Those were the days.
And then I played a readying protection deck and it went blam, blam, blam. And then I threw a couple counter punches in there just to see if I could eke out a turn 1 win if I was just shy.
Right.
In the hero phase.
Greg?
Yeah, I played a pretty similar deck to you, Jas, but probably slightly worse. It was basically leveraging repurpose, putting in energy barrier, force field generator, and then all Rocket's cards are also tech upgrades. So you have a lot of targets for repurpose. And I don't think I managed... I probably managed to leverage that about once a game, so I didn't do a ton of flipping, mainly just, you know, so I could avoid that flip back effect. And, you know, and Rocket I was getting enough kind of Rocket upgrades ready for me or available for me that I was able to, you know, keep those going. And only when I was sort of restricted out and I said, and you have repurpose in your hand, that then flipping sort of makes a little more sense because you can sort of, you know, clean your board and get cards a few different ways. I think it ended up being mostly clean, but really long. So 8 to 11 rounds. I think my 11th round was a Shadows of the Past round, which story would check out there. But it's also funny that it feels so long ago because this first round was 3 weeks because of that, and because we had taken a break between seasons, I was itching to go, and so I think I finished my things the first weekend, and so it's literally been like 4 weeks since I've actually played those rounds. I'm glad we're on a little faster clip now, back into the 2 week rounds with Colossus et al.
Yeah, I find I'm really thankful when I actually record some notes on my games, because you're right, it is often way in the distant past by the time we're talking about them.
Yeah. I won't read you my notes. I did take a bunch of notes on my Colossus games. I won't tell you what they were because it's just too depressing.
Uh, But you finished your round?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, that's
early bird.
Yeah, I'm early bird. I'm also trying to. Innsmouth Bear is starting an Arkham Horror League that you can play either multiplayer or solo, and so I'm going to try to eke out two games this week to get them in time for the Dunwich Legacy, which is sort of the first big campaign in Arkham. So going to try that because all these Arkham cards just sitting here not doing anything. I'm playing Champions too much.
Right.
I don't own any Arkham, so
I was going to ask you about
a league.
Yeah. I actually actively dislike the Arkham game, so have fun, everybody.
Yeah. Do you not like I'm not a huge fan of the theme, but the mechanics. I mean, it's a very difficult game. It's a lot harder than Champions, I think.
I don't especially care for the theme, and I hate the drawbag.
Yeah, the drawbag stinks. It's feel bad the game. But, you know, because it's a horror game, I sort of give it a little credit for, like, putting that dread in my hands every time you do that. But, yeah, that's one thing about Champions is there's no dice rolling. You know, there's some randomness sometimes. But yeah, it feels a lot more in control. It's just the randomness of the cards coming out pretty much and not something on top of that.
Yeah, I mean, solo champion... Marvel Champions is a place where, like, the way they use the randomness works well for me. There's not a lot of randomness associated with the thing that you're trying to do.
Yeah.
If you go to try to accomplish the thing, you accomplish the thing. It's more the things that are happening against you are the random elements. So that one for me just works way, way better.
Yeah, totally get it.
I also played Repurpose as you alluded to, and so I first really started playing some Repurpose Rocket at Con of Heroes, so I got quite a bit of practice. I feel like I'm a, you know, reasonably decent player at it, and I still kind of got hosed on it because this round really depended on what came up and when it came up. So I posted a practice game, and I had Captured by Hydra come out in the first or second turn and was able to, you know, turn that into a 6-turn win. And then here I had pretty similar overall to you, Greg, right? 9, 8, and 8 in terms of when I won, and I got 2 Shadows of the Past and all those sorts of things. And I never saw Captured by Hydra before this last or second last turn in any of the games. So it was pretty slow, but it was good. I think in the end, because I might have tried every single one of the heroes at least a couple times, but I liked the way Rocket just had the ability to deal with the threats because you had a combination of, you know, high threat side schemes and, you know, reasonably large minions that you needed to be able to deal with. And Rocket was the one that felt like he had the most flexibility out of the crew in terms of being able to deal with either of those kinds of things.
Yeah, Rocket, because of his 2 threat removal, I almost always used his basic action to you know, poke at some threat problem somewhere. And then you did have that card that allowed you to kind of ready and then get +1 on your threat. So you could do some 5 threat removal turns if you had that card in your hand.
Yeah, and he has access to another threat from his upgrade. Another thwart.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. So overall results, Rocket was actually the most popular at 28, Gambit at 24%, Vision at 19, Ms. Marvel at 16, and War Machine at 13. So pretty even across the board overall. I mean, obviously difference between 28 and 13 is pretty big, but, you know, everybody was pretty popular. I was surprised at how popular Ms. Marvel was when I played her. She felt like kind of the toughest one of the whole lot. So kudos to everybody who did that. But it's nice to see lots of representation from all the heroes.
Yeah, I feel like people don't generally like Miss Marvel in Protection. So
yeah,
a little bit surprising to see her not be last, at least from the general sentiment I get.
Yeah. So I'll be a little bit happy for myself that I picked kind of a good crew of heroes, that I didn't pick any duds, and people actually kind of had some good opportunities to take things on or take on heroes they don't normally play, or whatever the case that led the people's choices, we got to see from everybody. The overall performance, this is probably one of the tighter spreads I've scene in terms of how all the heroes did. Rocket did the best in terms of approval ratings. We had a 91% win rate and a 98 approval rating. The worst win rate was Ms. Marvel at 84, so that's really not that far off, and Gambit had 92, so just, you know, pretty tight there. And then the approval ratings went down to 90.9 at the lowest and 98, so pretty similar performances overall if we look at that. I don't know, anything jump out at either of you from kind of the performances of everybody?
It was interesting. War Machine was a lot faster, but also generally had a lot more trouble with threat. So, you know, lower threat score, but faster turns kind of evened out to about the same score as Gambit, who was a little slower and a little better at scheme.
That maps on to Gondo's experience, right?
Yeah. I felt it somewhat challenging to keep the threat down in my games, especially if Captured by Hydra came out before I was really ready to get it in one turn.
This may be a sign that Innsmouth was getting that formula kind of well tuned, you know, because you want right. A few different paths to a good approval rating. So sometimes you give up. You know, I'm usually the one that gives it up on slowness, and I usually take a lot more time because I want to try to at least, you know, preserve my score in the other areas.
Yeah, and you know, Rocket did have kind of the best across the board things. So his villain score, which is villain HP, scheme score, which is any threat left on the board, and then hero score, which is health. On, you know, on top of the turns that you're talking about, his were all pretty nice and high. Gambit had a pretty similar win rate, but we see the scheme score and the hero score is lower. And, you know, part of that is Gambit doesn't have access to any thwarting events in his hero side. So he can struggle a bit with that, especially ending the game. The end game threat is kind of hard to deal with for him.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised by that because he has he's the only hero here with, I think, innate access to Confused, unless Vision does. I'm not sure. I don't play Vision that much. I just thought he might be a little bit better on Scheme, given that he's got Confused in his kit.
Right,
yeah.
All right. So we're going to have a look at some decks worth discussing and deck awards. I think we already kind of talked about Rocket a little bit, but I don't know, Greg, anything we missed just discussing Rocket in general?
No, it's funny. Of the four top decks, they're all essentially repurposed decks. So that's the archetype. If you have all those tech upgrades in your kit with Rocket, that's pretty much what people focus on with protection. But it looks like all of them did that to some extent.
There was one, Kermity, who got the top performer with Rocket was Kermity in Flight 2, oh, wow. And they actually had a repurposed list. Repurpose, which is, I just called it that because it had three energy barriers. So this used Preemptive Strike, which was actually a pretty good call. So that's the one that, as a defense card, you cancel the boost icons and do damage back. And since there was a lot of three boost icon cards in the deck, this kind of, if you were going to be playing defense events, was a pretty solid one. But yeah, so the this was a non-repurpose. This was the only non-repurpose one of the folks that had a top performing deck.
It did the best. Very awesome.
Yeah. And pretty much everybody else had some variation of Villain Theory's deck, which is kind of a repurpose deck that, now that everybody's pretty familiar with the archetype, it's, you know, a pretty obvious build. It's pretty well tuned, but it's, you know, I think a lot of people could also independently come to a pretty similar build if they were making a repurposed Rocket deck. It wasn't something especially out of the ordinary, but I modified mine to have just a little bit more allies and endurance just to really be able to make sure I get that end game health threshold that you're looking for a perfect score.
Yeah, and hold off your having to flip until you have the right situation to flip through. So yeah, having those allies to protect Rocket is pretty important.
Right, and then second with Rocket was Ionet out of Flight 4. Pray for Mojo, second of their name, was out of Flight 3 and had the top score in Flight 3. Those were the top three, and then Greg and I were, you know, middling around in the middle of the pack as we do.
I love it there.
Also, I was also just keeping tabs on people's mix of tech cards for their repurposed decks. So most folks just kind of kept the three energy barriers, but Pray for Mojo had two energy barriers and two force field generators, which cost one more, and so they provide a little extra boost to when you actually use them for repurpose, but they're forced response, so they're harder to keep the tokens on, and they can actually disappear before you get a chance to repurpose them. But with Rocket has all those tech weapons and stuff, so and those don't get forced to leave play when they run out of counters.
Right.
So that's one of the big differences. Vision, we had, what are some of the important... Did either of you do any practice games with Vision?
No.
Yeah, I didn't. Vision's one I need to play more often just because I haven't really figured him out and sort of, worked up my real thoughts on Vision. But it looks like there's, because of his no damage side, there could be some shenanigans in production. You definitely do.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, one of the trickier things about Vision and protection is when he's intangible, he's not actually allowed to defend. So a lot of the cards that you kind of think of as defense cards are a little risky to include because they can just be dead weight in your hand. And so it is more things like Defiance and some other things that basically allow you to not have to deal with an encounter card effectively, and then you're intangible, taking two fewer damage from the attack kind of then finishes that off. So that's a pretty common thing in terms of the picks that you see that people went with. Freeze-dried Strahd, coming out of Flight 2, had a bit of a Velentaunt sort of build and had a bunch of cards that we honestly don't see a ton of. So I was pretty excited to see that they did as well as they did. They finished in six turns with, perfect scores. So really kind of nailed everything. So some of the cool cards were Bait and Switch. The villain attacks you, remove four threat from the main scheme. This goes well with, Vision being able to, when intangible, be able to just take those attacks without taking a lot of damage. Perseverance, when you change forms, you get a tough status, so that works well with Vision because he's changing forms all the time. And then, of course, works well with Bait and Switch for not taking damage from that attack. Powerful Punch, when an enemy initiates an attack, deal four damage to that enemy. So this is a nice, efficient damage card in protection. I think we did see a decent number of people play Powerful Punch, but it's not a card up until recently we've seen a ton of, because it's, in fact, from the most recent wave. And then Return the Favor. This kind of goes back to something that Greg was talking about with Rocket being able to take the treachery from Taskmaster and not worry about it too much. So this is discard cards from the top of the encounter deck until you discard a treachery, reveal that treachery, deal five damage to the villain. So obviously very efficient if you can handle the treachery. And the general consensus is the Taskmaster treacheries aren't that scary, right?
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
So Return the Favor was a pretty efficient choice, especially with Rocket, even though I don't think any of the top performing folks actually use that one.
It's kind of brilliant. I'm looking at Taskmaster now, and it's really Mimicry and Hunted by Hydra, which is, Incite one and a damage and then discarding the dreaded discard from your hand, from the random discard. So if you can stomach the random discard, there's only three treacheries in that whole area.
Oh, no. And then assault in advance and
the shadows.
Okay, fair enough. Yes, the standards are still bad.
And then, Brain, what's the one that makes you discard an upgrade or support?
Caught off guard.
Thank you. So there's all those, but again, none of them are other. If you know where Shadows is, Return the Favor is not that scary.
Yeah, and if you're not,
that's fair.
Not at risk for advance.
And then, very excited to see we're getting lots more rounds with Baby Corn around. So Baby Corn, we had a couple players a few seasons ago that were really tending to play tempo builds when that feature a lot of one-ofs and two-ofs. of cards instead of really focusing. So it's kind of Swiss Army knife decks, really focused on tempo. And so that's what Baby Korn brought. Baby Korn had second with Vision, and it was a, there's a decent number of defense cards, but it had none of the upgrades that would often go with the take no damage build. So rebooting for Vivian and for Vision, and just kind of lots of good efficient cards, and just went for tempo wins and got a great score.
Very awesome.
And then third, and this is a name that I actually went to figure out how to pronounce at some point, and now I can't remember, but it's House and then KYJZA. Apologies for not remembering how to actually pronounce that, but this is somebody who's coming out of the training grounds and flight four. I can't remember. I think they got moved, but there was an update to the results, so, that actually moved them in between those two things. So I think they might have gotten bumped back down to the training grounds due to XP or something like that. But anyway, they got third. We didn't get a deck from them. And then the top performing deck out of the training grounds was actually from Gamesu. So this is pretty decent round, nine turns and perfect scores on top of that, and used the first of two shield builds that we saw from some folks, and then leaning into, of course, just the things that work well with Vivian, like Med Team and Reboot. Did either of you try shield this round?
No, I mean, yeah, I almost always associate shield with justice, so I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I could see. Obviously, you still have a lot of good gray cards in shield.
Well, so the two protection cards that are shield traded are Black Widow and Med Team. And so that can set you up, a bunch of Med Teams and whatever, doing things like Dum Dum or Agent 13. Right, you have to exhaust Med Team to use it, and Agent 13 can actually let you ready a shield support, so you can get a little bit more use out of Med Team in one turn if you want.
Government liaison is basic, so that yeah, you get that economy going up pretty cheaply.
And Vision doesn't have too much setup, so being able to do something that's a little more high setup like shield seems reasonable. So that's a cool deck. Ms. Marvel, Gondo, you already said people tend to not think she's great in protection. What are some of the key reasons you think?
My first guess is not a lot of thwart and attack events that you really want to use, and Miss Marvel wants to use thwart and attack events through what's it, Embiggen and Shrink, I think they're called. So yeah, it makes it harder to use those very awesome upgrades, but I'm sure that obviously there's ways to get around that. Think recently there's been some renewed interest in Miss Marvel protection, as a fairly popular deck was recently published that's supposed to one turn kill basically. I don't think anyone actually used it this round, because it's not really a solo Champions League deck. However, I think there's some renewed interest that got people's minds turning that maybe the sentiment is changing.
Well, and one of the things, and we see this from a lot of the Ms. Marvel builds we have here, is that Ms. Marvel does have, arguably the single best hero kit defense card in the game. So Wiggle Room is a zero cost card. When you would take any amount of damage, prevent three of that damage, and draw a card. So she does lean into some of these take no damage defense builds from that perspective, but like you said, there's a lack of thwarting and attack cards.
Yeah, but we were seeing Fighting Fit and Hard Knocks. There are starting to be some more attack cards in protection that she can kind of leverage. So the top decks seem to be playing some of those at least.
Right, so speaking of, so Jarrett got the top score with Ms. Marvel, and is coming out of flight one. with a 7.3 turn average and kind of a perfect score beyond that. And Jared is one of the people who included fighting fit, which seems like a very brave thing to do when you're up against Taskmaster and facing a lot of ping damage, and fighting fit requires you to have be at or above your starting health to be able to actually use it as a 5 damage attack. So amazing. I guess once you're rolling, it's kind of easy to keep going, but initially probably a hard card to use. But Jarrett was one of the folks that kind of did throw the kitchen sink of take no damage upgrades. So, you know, we've got electrostatic armor and, well, flow like water is not a take no damage, but hard to ignore, unflappable, all those things, and lots of allies. So this looks pretty fun to me. I still feel like getting the fighting fit set up well would be pretty tricky, but I don't know. Any thoughts on that one from either of you?
Not much to add, but maybe once you get the energy barrier up, you're not really too likely to lose a lot of health if you're playing allies at a decent clip.
At that point, yeah. Just even that first flip, right? That getting back up to full health after flipping and having to take that initial damage from Taskmaster. Tricky.
Yeah, you probably have a decent chance at having sidestep or wiggle room in your opening hand, though.
Right.
Depending on how you're playing.
So that's a great point. So Jared also did include sidestep, which is, although it's defense traded, it's when you would take any amount of damage, and so is wiggle room. So both of those can help you prevent up to 3 damage, which is the maximum number of boost icons that we saw in any of the cards. And then Seymour Krellborn got second, is coming out of the training grounds, and again had a kind of take no damage type build, but unflappable was their only upgrade that really took advantage of that. 3 times jump flip, so instead of the sidestep, which prevents 3 damage, we got jump flip, which is kind of a similar type of card, but it prevents 2 damage, but it can be any amount of damage. So hopefully they really lucked out and didn't get hit by the 3 boost icon things too often when they had a jump flip. And a rare sighting of hit and run.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Well, if she's buffed, you know, that could make some sense.
Right, and it could be double buffed.
Yeah.
So hit and run is a for folks who don't remember, because it does not really get played very often. Hit and run's a 3 cost basic card that's deal 2 damage, remove 2 threat as an attack thwart event.
Yeah, it's the why are you playing this if you're not Gamora card?
Yeah.
Yeah, normally far too expensive for nearly anyone.
Yep.
If you wanted research, if you wanted to, Captain Marvel's probably rich enough, but.
Third is Chichanas out of Flight 2. Sorry, Greg.
Oh, no, I was going to say one thing just back on that deck that also doesn't show up a lot, but I wonder if in SEL it's probably a better value is the enhanced awareness style, you know, and enhanced strength, et cetera, basic cards, because it gives you an economy, but, you know, obviously runs out of counters eventually, but it's a lot cheaper to get up on its feet. And if you're trying to, you know, end quickly, these are probably a lot better deals than helicarriers and, you know, quin carriers and all those kind of the, you know, more permanent cards that are a little pricier. So it's just interesting to sort of think through, like, how can I get a faster economy going if you're, you know, don't have a death focus deck or some of those other sort of very synergistic economy cards.
Right. And that one's in part meant to set up Moon Girl, because Moon Girl's in the deck and you.
Yeah.
You draw cards after playing Moon Girl for every mental resource you play. So that the enhanced awareness sets that up.
Yep.
Next up is Gambit. Any Gambit thoughts?
I didn't try him this time, but I played him last when we were sort of, you know, trait locked, and I was playing X-Men last time, and so, you know, I just had so much fun. We just did a ranking of most fun of the original 8 X-Men hero packs that put out, and Gambit was by far number one. So even though he didn't seem to do quite as well he has that kind of big swing ability to really get some like huge damage turns going, which, you know, doesn't necessarily play with protection. He's just a fun hero that I think people are just figuring out, because he's also one of the more recent ones that came out.
He deals well, obviously, with things that can damage lots of things at once, because you can add some boosts to that. The bigger minions that we had here, you know, he was entirely reasonable against, but you kind of didn't get the full advantage of some of his cards because you weren't doing it against, you know, multiple things at once. And then, as I mentioned before, I think one of the places where he does struggle is his thwart cards are all stuck in Alter Ego, and you do get these side schemes that have five threat on them, so that those can be pretty tricky. And I think that that's part of, you know, between that and with his thwart being stuck on Alter Ego, you accumulate thwart then when you've flipped. So when you come back, you have to deal with a bunch of thwart on the threat on the main scheme. So that's a bit of a tricky one, and probably what made it a bit harder to actually finish clean from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think now that I'm thinking about it more, his confuse is conditional upon moving the last threat, I believe.
Yes.
So if you get like a little bit behind, you probably will start struggling pretty hard to keep it back down in protection at least.
Yeah, well, and it's a real banking for the future confuse, because you're doing it while you're already an Alter Ego.
Right.
Yeah, I guess so you can flip down with it in your hand, so he's confused going to the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, here. Yeah. Boy, I never even think of... But I guess I have done that, actually. So Kakita Jamie, coming out of Flight 4, was the top performer, and you know, similar to Jarrett in the Ms. Marvel round, 7.3 turn average, 100, 100, 110, so like perfect score in terms of clean. And this was a really neat build that was a very heavy Alter Ego build. Yeah. Used Meditation, which is exhaust your Alter Ego, play a card from your hand, reducing its resource cost by 3. Mutant Education, which cycles some identity-specific cards back in. X-Men Instruction, which cycles X-Men allies back in. And then the support cards for X-Men in general are also Alter Ego interaction things. So there's lots of neat stuff to interact with Alter Ego here and really incentivize you to be there.
Yeah, X-Mansion is such a great card if you're going to be flipping a lot.
Yeah, well, and I really like X-Mansion with Gambit specifically because you can actually use it to heal Rogue and get more activations out of her.
Yeah.
So if you're flipping a lot, you can basically keep Rogue in play the whole game if you have X-Mansion.
It looks like he has also a couple honorary X-Mens to give him X-Men while he's in Alter Ego too, in case there's some X-Men locked cards he's looking at.
Right. That is a bit of a tricky thing, is all the X-Men are just mutant on their Alter Ego side. And so a bunch of things that do require X-Men trait, the honorary X-Men can help set you up. And we saw some stuff like that similar with Avengers. I think the Guardians are mostly... Are they Guardians traded when they're in Alter Ego? I think they're also not, right? So
a lot of them are Outlaws.
Oh, right. Yeah.
A very synergistic trait.
No. Is there anything that synergizes with Outlaw? Not a single thing, right?
No, it is funny. Like, what are they planning in, like, 5 years? You know? Like, what's the Outlaw box that's going to come out?
Astrodar, place off Fursers.
Yeah.
Astrodar got second, so my alliance mate with kind of a remarkable build. If I actually incorrectly noted who got the Astrodar award, because Astrodar came in with a whopping 2.
Right. Good on him. Take the award back.
Very good showing.
A whopping 2 protection cards, so Starhawk and Unflappable, which is after you defend against an attack and take no damage, exhaust Unflappable, draw a card. That one is just kind of a banket for future stuff because there's no extra defense cards in here, but Gambit actually has a basic defensive three and then has some actual defense cards in his deck, in his kit as well. So you still are defending a decent amount.
Yeah, and if you want to, you can get natural agility back pretty often. Some of the other X support things. What's that one? Mutant Education or something?
Yeah, yeah. Astrodar has three copies of Mutant Education
yes.
to throw those back.
I was just struggling which one actually did the effect. I'm like, there's a ton right. of X stuff in here, but which one's the one I'm looking for?
Ton of X stuff, and then, yeah, pretty fun to assess the situations, really trying to keep the deck pretty lean overall. Lockjaw to help provide some kind of on-demand threat removal when you really need it.
Probably synergizes pretty decent with the Thwart event. Lockjaw might hit two, and then you the last three with your thing, and then the villain's confused, and it's a happy time, and you have a cool mm-hmm. cost ally.
Yeah, agreed. And then coming out of Flight 3, third place was Salus, which was another take no damage build with three hard to ignores. I really liked having hard to ignore, especially with Gambit, because again, he's not interacting with the threat that well. So those hard to ignores are the ones that if you defend and take no damage, you remove a threat from the main scheme and you can stack three of them.
Yep.
So that when I was playing around with Gambit a bit, I definitely found I was really trying to lean into the hard to ignores.
Yeah, those are very often my perfect defense protection decks, especially yep. in solo.
And then finally, we have War Machine, which was your home, Gondo. Anything we haven't discussed in terms of things worth noting for War Machine this round?
He does have a little bit of versatility. When you're going down the Alter Ego, you can pick a card to shuffle back in to your deck yep. with that might be pertinent to the situation you're in. So you could have a decent chance of kind of forcing yourself to draw a card you'd really like to have. So that's something that I'd imagine folks here were utilizing pretty well.
Well, his two main kind of cheap events that are his thwart one and his just kind of single attack one are very, very efficient. So those are often a nice one to get back in because you're just
especially
putting...
if you have a gun out because you basically just exhaust the gauntlet gun and then you play the event. because the ammo you need is generated on demand plus
on demand
for it.
And then it was a nice way to be able to ensure that you could keep that threat removal available when you needed it.
Indeed.
So coming first out of War Machine was Pack Attack CB with just a crap ton of allies. We had 11 allies in there. Three energy barriers and one repurpose because we do definitely have some tech cards in there so you can take advantage of that, but didn't lean into repurpose too hard. Not today. So when you're here defense against an attack, it gets plus two defense for an attack. If you take no damage from the attack, remove two threat from a scheme. So this was another way to get a little bit more threat removal from a hero that only has one thwart. And so that came out of Rogue's Pack. So that's another good kind of plus two defense and then do something else sort of card, especially if you take no damage. And then Tackle, just a little bit of extra avoiding activations. Middleman coming out of Flight 1 got second. They tend to play very fast but have kind of messy boards. And then coming in third was Rekatul, also out of Flight 1. And I thought they had the Astrodar Pre-Memorial Award, but they actually had three aspect cards, believe it or not.
Frankly, that's way too many in protection.
That's way too many in protection.
You didn't need that Black Widow in there. You could have gone with one med team and just went for it. Come on.
Oh, you needed that Black Widow because they actually played, this is the other shield deck. Oh, so this is really, really invested in shield. So we got Dum Dugan is in here, two med teams, Black Widow, Agent 13, crew quarter, or sorry, government liaison, helicarrier, sky destroyer, all the stuff. Yeah. So this delights me. I definitely find, again, War Machine is pretty tricky to play, such a high cost investment deck in terms of getting up and running, but Rekatul did great. So what do I know? Games are pretty long. broadly speaking, not just their games.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of time for the liaisons and the Sky Destroyers of the world to pay off.
Avengers Mansion. Oh my gosh, that's so rare.
Yeah. There's three meditations in here, which helps make sense of some of those really high cost gray cards.
Yeah, and Power of All of Us too. So yeah, definitely leaning into the gray economy.
Sky Destroyer's really, really nice in scenarios where you're trying to do damage without attacking. So there's things like guards or other things that you're trying to interact with that.
Yeah, like a minion has retaliate.
Yeah. So
I would bet at least once or twice that a Sky Destroyer hit one of the Sinister Six for two, and then a Repulsor Beam took out the last four.
Yeah. I think Sky Destroyer is not an auto-include for me when I play Shield, but definitely if the scenario is looking for some of that damage that's coming from non-attack sources, that's when it starts coming in. Unless I'm playing a Dum-Dum Dugan deck and I'm just trying to get every possible Shield card I can in there.
Yeah, Dum-Dum Dugan's really nice with Black Widow too, because maybe Black Widow didn't cancel a treachery, then you can just exhaust her because you don't want her to take consequential damage. So
you don't want to take, yeah. But no, that's another neat thing about the Shield ones, right? So it's a thing where you can keep your Agent Coulsons or your Agent 13s or whatever, where there's not necessarily anything you really want to force them to take consequential damage for, like you're saying with Black Widow, and then you can use them in other ways in the Shield archetypes. Definitely enjoy that archetype a lot.
Yeah, she could either get rid of a stinky treachery or fuel Dum-Dum Dugan.
Yeah, stinky treachery, just waiting around for shadows.
Yeah.
I didn't tag too many for any of the wards. A little distracted with other things in life, but I don't know any especially cool texts that we discussed that people wanted to re-highlight.
I'd like to give a two-way tie to the both Shield decks. I never thought about doing that in green before, so nice innovation there.
I was just saying, like, and for Shield, I just... Dum-Dum Dugan is a card I just never consider because it's so expensive, but, like, really trying to lean into how would I make him work was an interesting challenge that the last deck seemed to pull off. So, yeah, I want to think about that. Think about how to get old Dum-Dum in play.
Yeah, So... I've definitely played him in some Shield decks, and especially ones when you're actually looking to blow through the second half of the villain without actually having to stay there. He's a great way to get a bunch of burst damage. You know, in leadership where you can ready him again, or if you can combine him with some other good sources of damage, he's pretty awesome that way. And he can also do burst thwart because his ability works on both his attack and his threat removal. Yep. Cool. Greg, any other things that jumped out to you?
No, like I said, it's my brain was too dusty on this thing because I did it so long ago. But yeah, it was fun to at least walk through some of these decks, and it gives me some. I'm already making regretful choices of what I did with Colossus. So we're all learning.
Yeah, don't be such an eager beaver.
I know.
Yeah, I have some ideas, but I might be theory crafting too close to the sun. We'll see how that works out.
Oh my god, I love it. Cool. Well, any last parting thoughts from either of you before we sign off?
No, always fun to do this, and by next time I will have thrown this microphone that doesn't work in the trash, so hopefully it'll sound better because I'll have bought another one that doesn't work by then.
They're all single use.
That's right.
No. Electronic waste.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Gondo, anything?
Everyone stay cool out there. It's getting hot out. For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yep. Indeedly do. Cool. Well, thank you both Greg and Gondo for joining us this week. And thanks, listeners, for joining us on the Road to Nowhere. See you next time.
Bye.